Hey, it's Antoinette, and welcome to another episode of the Hormone Heartbeat podcast. For today's episode of the fertility series, I've decided to do something a little different, and I'm going to have a real and raw conversation with a friend and fellow fertility soul sister. This episode is going to be personal, vulnerable, and may get emotional. This will be the first time I'll be publicly sharing my story. For a while, I had been hiding in silence and feeling trapped, and it really is time to break that silence and use my story to empower other women and couples to know that they are not alone and that infertility is quite common. And one of my favorite pieces of advice that was given to me by my endocrinologist actually was, sometimes healthy people have infertility. This resonated a lot with me because I had a lot of shame around being a fertility naturopath and being really good at helping other couples conceive, and for some reason, I wasn't able to achieve that for myself. Today's episode will not dwell on the hardships of infertility or be a ranting session, because those of you going through it really know exactly what it's all about. And those listening who aren't there yet, well, your journey and story does not have to be what anyone else is experiencing. Today's episode will be about personal stories to foster connection with listeners and my fellow TTC badass warriors, and offer listeners some wisdom and insights that both myself and my guest today have gained on our journey. My guest today is Rachel, and she is a fellow TTC warrior. We met a few years ago at a local event in our town, and I felt an instant connection with her. She was easy to talk to. We had so many similar interests. And then I found out that we were getting married on the exact same day. I couldn't help but think, wow, the universe is sending me clear signs and bringing us together. After a couple of good chats, we discovered that both of us have been on this fertility journey ever since our wedding day. And it took some time for me to open up about what I was going through, but Rachel was very open about it, and it was her strength and support that I believe ultimately has me speaking out about this today. I'm super excited to share our interview with you today, and our hope is that someone listening to this in their car can be uplifted, that we bring smiles and laughters at a time where it can be really tough to find joy. Welcome, Rachel. It is so amazing to have the opportunity to chat with you live on the show today. Thank you for being here.
Welcome to the Hormone Heartbeat Podcast, a podcast about female empowerment through menstrual cycle health, the true heartbeat of your hormone status. With each episode, we'll explore the foundations of hormone health with science, soulful and heartfelt conversations, a dash of sass and feminine pizzazz. Our dream is to arm you with exactly what you need to be an unstoppable female force, ready to achieve all that your heart desires and embrace your inner goddess. And here's your host, naturopathic doctor, birth doula, fertility awareness educator, hormone enthusiast, and lover of pretty things, Antoinette Falco.
Welcome, Rachel. It's so amazing to have you here. I can't wait to get this interview going and for this opportunity to chat live on the show today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to kind of jump right in, and this interview is going to be real. It's going to be raw. It's going to be vulnerable. It's going to be all of the things. But we're really hoping together to uplift that choose to listen to today's episode.
For sure.
Let's start off with if you could share briefly your story and maybe highlight a couple of the tough moments.
For sure. So my story, I think it's important for me to mention that my husband actually in 2017 was diagnosed with testicular cancer. And so that was a really, really tough journey. And thankfully he's healthy, he's well, but you know, he did go through chemotherapy and he actually did have a testicle removed. So we always did kind of wonder what fertility would look like for us. We, you know, that was in the back of our heads that perhaps we might have some challenges. And, you know, fast forward to 2 years later, we're married. We've been trying now at this point for almost, I don't know, close to 2 years. And we're having fertility challenges. We tried for almost a year, and then we ended up going to a fertility clinic, which we were taken probably more seriously than the average couple was because of his history. We were lucky that we got in right away. They were willing to do the tests right away. And unfortunately, you know, we really don't have an explanation as to why we're unable to get pregnant. You'd think that it would be because of him. That's kind of and he has told me that if I want to let people think that, he's okay with that. But the truth is that we have unexplained infertility. His tests have come back clean. Mine, for the most part, have come back clean. We did 3 IUIs over the course of last year, and we're currently in the middle of IVF. We were lucky enough to have a funded round through OHIP. So we did have, I did an egg retrieval. We have 5 frozen embryos currently. And in April is when we're hoping to do our first frozen transfer. So we're in this space right now of just kind of waiting and, trying naturally still and just trying to relax and take care of ourselves. I'm trying to detox from all of the hormones, recover from that period of time in my life, which was, pretty hard on my body. And that's kind of brings me to where I am now.
Do you feel like a little bit of a weight's been lifted now that you know you've done the retrieval?
Absolutely. That was the hardest part for me, I think. But at the same time, I mean, it was hard physically, but at the same time, it was a bit of an answer or a solution. It was something I had really thought I'd resisted against for a long time. I didn't want to take that route. I really did want to take the natural route or the most natural route with some reproductive technology helping as it, as much as it could. But having said that, now that I know that I have those embryos and that we're kind of just waiting, it takes so much pressure off. I find that even just trying naturally every month between my husband and I, we're able to, actually maybe like enjoy sex with each other instead of timing it meticulously and doing it 14 times, over the course of 4 days when really we only want to do it maybe 3 or 4 times. Mm-hmm. So we're both able to relax a little bit more, I think, in that regard.
The hormones alone, just so much that you get. You pump your body through going through the process that, it definitely is nice to have a bit of a break and feel like yourself again, right? We're talking about having intercourse many times within the window and like feeling stressed about intercourse. And then on top of that, it's the hormonal piece of, well, our hormones might be going in all these different directions, messing with our libido. So we don't even want to have intercourse on those days. Yeah. What would you say, highlighting back in the last, last 2 years, what are some of the really tough moments that you want listeners to hear and feel normalized? It's common. It is a tough journey.
Yeah, it is. I think the toughest thing for me was thinking there was something wrong with my body or both of our bodies, that I wasn't able to do something that is so natural and that is, one of the things that everybody's supposed to be able to do. I know that that's not true anymore. I understand that it's a challenge, but I know that more people that I talk to in this space feel that way as well. And there's a lot of stigma and a lot of shame around that. People potentially conceive children through IVF or reproductive technologies and they keep it a secret because they think that there's something wrong with their body or, they could be really healthy. They could work out and eat really clean and do everything right, air quotes right, and struggle to conceive. And it's sad and it sucks. But I think that was probably the biggest challenge. And just the isolation, loneliness, which brings me to, why I loved connecting with you and having these conversations with you, because you can talk to somebody who understands or who, can even just relate to you in a way that makes you feel like you're not alone. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that for me has been more helpful than therapy. Therapy is great and really important too, but to have someone else who this great positive outlook or, even on the bad days when we just want to, sit and commiserate with each other, you need that though. And those feelings of isolation, they can be toxic. They can creep in.
Yeah. We're constantly talking about how detrimental it is for the elderly, isolation.
Yeah.
And, here we're going through it in our 30s and, wanting to start a family. Like it affects everybody at different stages, but definitely I would say in this fertility space, isolation and that lack of connection. For me, for example, I found that I wanted to connect with people that fully 100% understood where I was in the journey. And even if they didn't understand exactly, they were, they were somewhere along their fertility journey so they could connect and really resonate with where I was. But I was really surprised when it came to some of my family support. So I had family and friends that had gone through the journey, but I felt like they had forgotten what it was like. But then after the fact, I realized that the shame is because my family truly believed that I was this healthy person, a naturopath. I worked in the fertility space, you know, like she's not gonna have any problems. So we can throw the teases a little bit here and there and be like, okay, you just got married. When is it? When are you gonna have your baby? And they didn't think it would be a challenge for me. And then here I was like hitting that challenge. And it, to me, when I reflect back, that was definitely a compliment on their part, but also it just furthered that shame for me in that, like, why wasn't I getting pregnant? You know, I was able to help my patients, but why wasn't it happening for me? And it wasn't until I was like, you know, that doesn't have to be my story. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stop this. I'm going to like allow my brain to believe like what I want it to believe. But then this goes back to, you have support from, you know, friends and family, they mean well, they really do. Sometimes they don't know what to say. They don't know the right words to use. And I kind of always think like it's a choice that I was able to consciously make. What they're saying isn't necessarily what they really mean. They're really trying to say, we love you. We're here for you. We support you is really what they're trying to say.
I agree.
You were saying about a friend who you had a story. Yeah. Would you mind share that one?
So I was just talking to one of my best friends the other day. We were texting and I had, you know, shared something about how I was feeling, and, you know, I could tell she was coming from a good place and she was trying to offer me some words of encouragement. And, you know, it was well-intended, but it wasn't really what I wanted to hear. And so, you know, a few minutes passed and then she texted me and said, I'm sorry, I feel like I'm saying all the wrong things. And in that moment, I had compassion for her because I knew, like you just said, she loves me. She was sitting there stressing out over what to say to me to try and make me feel better. And she doesn't know. And I don't blame her for not knowing, but I love her. And I really appreciate the fact that she is trying to say what's helpful. And I took that moment to say, that's okay. I'm not upset about this. That's fine. Like, this is not, I'm not upset about what she just said. It wasn't mean-spirited. It wasn't negative on purpose. And I'm going to take that in stride because I know she loves me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are other comments sometimes that you can get from, you know, other friends or strangers that can be, you know, a little more cutting or a little more
triggering
and maybe thoughtless.
Yeah.
And this wasn't one of those moments. So like you said, I think you can take that opportunity sometimes and make that decision
mm-hmm.
to know that that person loves you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, for those listening who may have a close friend, a family, someone going through infertility, sometimes it's better to say, I don't know what to say, or I'm here for you, versus, you know, trying to ask questions or understand or, you know, put an explanation to it. Sometimes not saying anything is better than saying something.
Yeah, I completely agree. Rather than, you know, trying to potentially compete with my doctor and tell me what I need to do or what I should be doing, or that I need to relax, or that I need to go on vacation, or that it'll happen, or that I'm trying too hard. Those things are very triggering. I think that saying, I'm so sorry that this is happening to you and I love you and I don't know what to say is way more helpful.
Yeah. Be empathetic, hold space. Those are the important things. That point about stress, I think that like really bothers me, because I know that stress is not good for my fertility. I know that it, you know, stress stops the body from ovulating. I know that an embryo is not going to implant if the environment's stressful. We understand these things about our bodies, but when we're actively in it, there isn't that magic switch. You just get to like turn off on your brain and be like, I'm not going to stress about this. You know, it doesn't work that way. And it goes even deeper than that, because for me, I know being a mom is something that I dreamt about as a little girl.
Me too.
And, you know, it's painful. It's hard. You just want to be doing everything you can to bring that dream that you had to reality.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there was the one thing I can do, like turn off stress, I would do it in a heartbeat.
No kidding.
Right? I guess it's to those comments around like, you just need to relax, you just need to go on vacation. You know, as women in it, we will say, like, we know those things.
Yeah.
So those don't become helpful.
You know what else too? I think I read this somewhere that, you know, stressed out people have babies too.
True.
Stressed out women with high powered jobs. I mean, rape victims have babies sometimes. True. As horrible as that is, you know, I don't think it's fair, again, to put that back on us as something we're doing wrong.
Right.
You know, to blame yourself again and to say my stress levels are preventing me from getting pregnant or my stress levels aren't helping. Again, it's another way of blaming yourself. And I think that, yes, do take the bath and you know, go to therapy and take a walk, whatever self-care looks like for you, mm-hmm. get a massage. Do those things. Yes, absolutely. Manage your stress levels as best as you can, but don't let your stress you out.
Right.
Because the fact of the matter is that millions of stressed out people have babies every day. So I don't let that be something else. I speak for myself that I was mentally adding as another block.
Yeah, that's right? A good point. Like we're talking about those stories. Like that's another story. Like I'm too stressed to get pregnant. Or like, I won't get pregnant now because I'm stressed.
Yep. It's never going to happen if I keep this up.
Yeah.
You know, I can feel my heart racing. I can feel worry about this, or my job is really stressful this month and I've got all this work to do. I'm definitely not getting pregnant this month. I've thought all of those things. Mm-hmm. And those are added barriers, you know, that mindset. And so, you know, that people stressed out people get pregnant all the time, sometimes by accident. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it's I just don't like that it's another thing that we take on.
I like that. I know for me, this is really landing today. Like, you know, just deciding not to take on that stress as a reason and deciding not to take on it as another thing that someone tells you you're, quote, doing wrong.
Exactly.
Because we know we're doing everything plus more.
We're doing more than most people, you know, in terms of our health, in terms of our mental health, in terms of, you know, our spirituality, or, you know, whatever that looks like. You know, in this journey, I've gone clean with all of my household products. I've gotten rid of all of my unhealthy makeup. And those are all things that I'm so glad that I did, and changes that I think were necessary for my life. But most people don't do all those things. And mm-hmm. I think we're in a lot of ways in better shape than most people, or that we might have been without this journey. Possibly. Yeah. So, you know, some positives that have come from that.
Mm-hmm. Let's transition now to kind of what have been like the key learnings.
Yeah.
That you have taken away from this journey.
Honestly, some of the biggest key learnings for me have been, you know, getting rid of products with phthalates, or avoiding products with the artificial and synthetic fragrances that are endocrine disruptors. Obviously, your help as well and your knowledge, you really kind of got me into that in the first place. But reading books and learning that, I think, will take me for the rest of my life, you know, finding natural, beautiful products that I can use, kind of keep my regimen a little more holistic. And then I think as well, for me, you know, the fertility awareness method, I really kind of came across while I was in this space and in this journey. I don't know if I ever really would have. I think I'm more in tune with my body than I've ever been. I don't have your background. So for me, it was something that I came into late in life. You know, mm-hmm. I would have thought that I was in tune with my body. I had a period tracker. I thought I ovulated on day 14, like everyone else, every month. And I realized that that's not true. And I realized that, you know, I can look at my cervical mucus and it's going to tell me a lot more. I can look at my periods and it's going to tell me a lot more about mm-hmm. my body and what's going on with my body. That's such a key takeaway that I actually love to share with anyone who will listen, and friends and family members, or, you know, my sister or anyone else that thinks that they might be in this space in the future. You know, start now with fertility mm-hmm. awareness. Start now with figuring out your body. Get rid of all the toxic products in your house and your makeup. Huge for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's no harm in starting it before, you know, before it's, quote, go time, or before you're actively ready to start trying. Like, it's only going to support your body and get you healthier going into that journey.
Lisa Hendrickson Jack says in her podcast or in her book that, you know, we spend time preparing for every stage of life. We spend time preparing. We prepare for a wedding a year in advance. We don't prepare for pregnancy. We don't typically take that time to, you know, detox our bodies or get our bodies ready. And you and I, you know, in our situations that we ideally wouldn't choose to be in, but we're here, we're taking that time. We're getting ready. Mm-hmm. We're doing the work that we need to do, not only mentally, but physically, to prepare for that. And I think that will benefit us, obviously, mm-hmm. in the long run.
Yeah, conception, not only about having the baby, right? Like, yeah. And preconception care, so much more goes into that in terms of, yes, we care about the egg quality, and yes, we care about healthy embryo, and we care about implantation, and we care about a healthy pregnancy, but what we don't talk about is like the health of the baby, your journey through pregnancy, mm-hmm. even your postpartum, right? This preconception care, fertility care, it really goes beyond just a sperm meeting an egg.
Yeah, that's so true. I completely agree.
Another thing that for me, I know I learned is learning to surrender. Mm. And surrender isn't the same as giving up. And I remember when I learned this, it was huge because I was mixing those up. And I was like, no, I'm not like ready to give up on having a baby. I'm not there yet. But surrendering to me is you're letting go of the 100% control over this outcome. And you're saying, I'm going to trust in my body. I'm going to trust in the higher powers that be, whether that's universe, whether that's God, whether that's like whoever is there for you. And even going beyond science too, like surrendering to what is going to happen in my journey is going to happen because that's what was supposed to happen at the right time that it was supposed to happen. And, you know, yes, there's a lot of things with science that have come a long way in terms of artificial reproductive technology. Things aren't 100% known, right? So many intricate reactions and steps need to happen in order for a pregnancy to occur. We know the big ones. We know, okay, you have to ovulate. We know fertilization has to happen. We know the body has to implant. But there's so many other things that happen in between each of those steps that we don't really fully understand.
It's magic.
It's really magic. It really is magic. And so surrendering and trusting brings me to kind of my next point about divine timing. I always believed, you know, in my soul that the babies were going to come and that the babies were there. Like I never felt the belief that I couldn't get pregnant, but I definitely, like everybody, was, you know, on my own timeline of like, okay, I got married. Now I've like done that thing. Now it's time.
I'll just
like
get pregnant. Just get pregnant
on my honeymoon, you know, perfect. Like that's what happens. I would say like one of the learnings like that really transformed my journey, and I would encourage everyone to listen to the last episode that I did with Leanne Newman, where she talked about spirit babies. Because for me, my spirituality along this journey was huge, because that allowed me to fully surrender and like allow me to let go of any control I had over the outcome of when my babies were going to come into this physical world. But just connecting with that, you know, with my spirit babies or my babies that were out there, and talking with them and like really thinking about it as I really am doing everything I can, and there's like the babies also have a say when they're coming in. And really to me, that's divine timing. That's when they're choosing the right exact moment to come in into our
My Reiki practitioner said that exact thing to me. She said, your, you know, babies, these babies that we have, they're not ours, they're gifts. And we, you know, we raise them, we take care of them, but they are ultimately their own people. And your baby's waiting for you for the right time, you know? And again, I think that it just allows you to relax a little bit and not just feel so tense all the time about when's this going to happen, when's this going to happen. Just that idea of divine timing in that I don't have control over this, so I need to let it go.
Yeah.
Because the more tense and the more control I try to have over this, the more I am stressing myself out and it's not serving me.
And the more you hold on to a belief or a thing, what resists persists, right?
Yeah.
Whew, yeah. That was a heavy one, right? Because I just think some of your listeners might sound woo-woo, but at this stage, you know, we'll take all of the...
I will. I never even thought I would see a Reiki practitioner. And it's so welcomed and it's so... Like the first time I saw her, I sobbed. Sobbed harder than I have ever, that I have cried in months. And I mean, this journey, I mean, I cry more than I ever have. I cry, I welcome it. You know, I really do kind of use it as a release. If I feel it, I let it come. I do whatever I need to do to feel better. But seeing the practitioner and just some of the things that she said to me and the way I interpreted them, I think, you know, everybody's different. For me, was a way to, ultimately, it was a release. It's something else I was searching for. Really encourage anyone on this journey to find a practitioner that they do connect with. It might not be for you, but for me, I found someone I connect with, and she's a lovely person. And some of the things that she says and she picks up from me are things that no one else would know or see. So it is pretty incredible.
And for those listeners who, you know, have a deeply rooted religious connection, you know, we're not saying this is spirituality and religion are not one and the same. Often they get confused as one and the same, but your religious practice now is a really good time to draw on that, because you want all the hope, you want all the support, you just want it all surrounding you in this journey. My next point that I like to talk about is, like, what are the blessings and the moments that you have to be grateful for throughout this journey? You know, it could be a really negative time, and I'm always looking for ways to reframe, ways to spin this, because ultimately that negativity doesn't serve us.
No. I think for me, although my husband and I have been through a lot together already, this journey specifically has brought a new closeness, brought us closer in a different way. I think in the health journey that we had with him previously, I really stepped up and was his caregiver, and was, you know, it was my primary focus to take care of him and to nurse him back to health wherever I could. And I think the roles have reversed in this, although this journey specifically involves both of us in a way. He has stepped up and is so much more, you know, through many conversations, through tears, through every kind of temper tantrum that I've had or breakdown that I've had, he has come so far in being able to recognize my feelings, be there for me in a way, not that he'd never had, but in a new way that I need. He is just so much more sensitive. We're so much more close. We have conversations that are so deep that we've never had before. He's so involved in my health. You know, he recognizes that I go to a fertility clinic every 2 or 3 days and I do blood work and I have a vaginal ultrasound, and he realizes how traumatic that is. And conversations that we have and the support I get from him is a huge blessing. And I'm so lucky and grateful that I have a partner like that. But I just think I take from that we did take vows, and our vows, we said sickness and in health and better and for worse. And we're living those vows. Mm-hmm. And people who have babies or children and they go through really tough seasons in life and it challenges their marriage, I think that for me going through this, I just am like really sure that we can handle all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that we'll be okay if we have each other and we keep our communication open. And we have different beliefs. Don't get me wrong. I do, you know, things like Reiki and practices like that. And that's not really his thing, but he still supports that. He asks about it. He, you know, he's open-minded because he knows that, you know, that's important to me. And that's just where we are and on this journey. And I'm so grateful.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I like that you brought in the marriage piece of it, because have the wedding day and then you're like, everything's great. Like, we're in this honeymoon phase, as they say. And then you get thrown with the challenges of infertility. And it really then says, okay, no bullshitting. Any kinks in your relationship, we're bringing them to the table
for sure
right now. And to me, that's been a blessing, because it is an opportunity to create a solid unit as a couple, as future parents, so that you be fully equipped with everything that you need mentally, physically, emotionally to become parents and to welcome a child into this world.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's already taught us to ask for what you need from your partner. Don't expect them to read your mind.
Yes.
If I know I'm having a particularly tough day, month, week, if I feel super emotional, I wake up and I tell them I feel super emotional today.
Yeah.
And give them those cues. We'll work together to figure it out. And I think that sometimes those are the things people do have to figure out later on in life, maybe when they have a newborn or maybe when they have children in a already super stressful time. And I'm not saying that we've got it all figured out and it will be great or easy, but I think that we've made progress, like, significantly.
Mm-hmm. And I actually had a patient the other day tell me that when she went to the fertility clinic, they actually asked her, like, how's your relationship? How's your marriage? Because at the clinic that I'm working with, that was not a conversation that was brought up. It's really great to see that even Western medical setting is recognizing just like the strain and the stress this journey could have on a marriage.
I completely agree. And you just reminded me of a story. I went actually into the drugstore the other day and I saw somebody I used to work with, a lovely, lovely person. And I hadn't seen her in a little while. And I think I was buying ovulation predictor strips. And so I just kind of like, you know, showed her and made this face like, oh, this is my life. And she actually said to me, you know, like, how are you doing? How's it going? And I was like, oh, we're doing IVF. And she's probably in her, you know, mid to late 40s. And she said, you know, we did that too. And she's childless. And she said, yeah, you know, we did that too. And it didn't work for us, but you know, she's happy and her life is great. But what stuck with me was that she said to me, don't let it ruin your marriage. Don't let it ruin your marriage. Her exact words were, get drunk and have sex with each other because it's almost like you forget to just enjoy it and just have fun, you know, intercourse with your husband once in a while and not super timed and regimented and restricted. And so I told him that when I went home and I just said, you know, that is such a funny thing for her to say, but it's so true. At the end of the day, we have had some really hard conversations or arguments or bad days where, you know, I've reverted back to that and thought, you know, like this isn't going to create a strain on my marriage. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, this is not the point of this.
I think my husband said to me once, he's like, you have me. Because sometimes when you think, when you're grieving a negative test or, you know, your period coming, you feel like you have nothing. And then hearing him say, like, at the end of the day, you have me, each other, we have our marriage.
That could make me cry. Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
It is so beautiful. Sometimes I just even think about him and how much he does for me. And it just brings a tear to my eye because, yeah, if... you know, God forbid I'm not ready to accept this yet, but if, you know, this doesn't work out for us, I'm still so blessed.
Yeah.
And you are too.
Yeah. Hashtag blessed. Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously.
If you could go back and give yourself, like, let's say 2 years ago, one piece of advice, what is the one piece of advice that you would tell yourself?
I think I would tell myself a few things, if that's okay.
Yeah.
But I think the big one would be, this isn't going to happen overnight, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And it is a journey. And to, like, make peace with that.
Yeah.
And that the fertility clinic isn't going to solve all your problems either, you know? Yeah. There was this, thank God for like you said, you know, thank God for these reproductive technologies. But, you know, I've been at the fertility clinic for going on a year now, with a few breaks in between. But it didn't solve all my problems. You know, I thought as soon as I got there and I got the appointment, I saw the doctor, he was going to figure out what was wrong and he was going to fix, quote unquote, fix us.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, knowing that would have been helpful in a way too, just that, that it's okay, that it's a journey. These things take time and, and self-care, like just take care of yourself. Say no to the baby shower every now and then if you need to.
Yeah.
I'm lucky, you know, I have a really good friend who I was able to just be honest with and just say, I'm not in the headspace for your baby shower. And she was so lovely. And I know not everybody has a friend that's that understanding. But yeah, just give yourself permission and space and take care of yourself. And that this is going to take time. And like you said, divine timing, it's going to not happen on your schedule.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I would have to agree a lot of what you just said in terms of what I would go back and tell myself. And then we kind of touched on this too, but about the marriage, but just not letting this process consume you as a person. I had a lot of fear at the beginning around, like, you know, how much everything was going to cost and, you know, right. It was going to mean that we couldn't move forward with renovations on our house that we wanted to do or like vacations or, you know, you just, it's scary when you think about that. I mean, we are also blessed that we live in a country where like the government will fund some of,
absolutely.
Or province where the government will fund some of that. Still a chance, you know, there, nothing is guaranteed. But yeah, so like not letting it consume me and still being able to let's say, like, live my life and do creative things in my career and, you know, be able to have conversations with friends and, you know, go out and socialize. Because for a while, like, I didn't feel like doing all that. I was like, no, I don't want to, like, have to get into it. And I didn't want them mm-hmm. to assume. Or my favorite thing was, oh, they're going to wine watch, which is like, oh, you're not drinking. You must be pregnant. And then they're going to go and, you know, blurt it out. And then, no, I'm not pregnant. But now I have to get into this awkward conversation with you about
why I'm not drinking. Yeah.
And I said this before we recorded, but the idea of baby showers, like, totally okay to say no to baby showers. And I definitely said no to a couple baby showers. But then I guess something kind of switched for me is that I realized I had to do this internal self-work to feel good about myself. Because when I went to a baby shower, like, nobody really is, like, thinking about me and, like, oh, why is she not pregnant? Like, nobody's thinking about that. They're celebrating whoever's shower it is. But it's ourselves that we project that and we assume that that's what they are thinking of us.
You're so right. I felt personally that my friend who knew the extent of what I was going through, she was pregnant, that she was going to not be able to enjoy herself and she was going to feel bad for me for being there. And I made all of that up. Like, yeah. She's a very, very empathetic person, yes, but these are the stories that we tell ourselves, right?
And with that, I heard this quote the other day, saying someone can't be sad because someone else has it worse is like saying you can't be happy because someone else has it happier.
Yeah, similarly to that, I think I heard once that this isn't the pain Olympics.
No.
It's not about winning in your category of how much pain you've endured or how, you know, much suffering you can handle. It's like, my pain sucks, your pain sucks.
Yeah.
We can both acknowledge that.
Saying that it's a journey is really the best way to describe it because everyone's going to have their ups and downs in it. And just being there for people and being supportive for them is really the most important thing. We're pretty lucky in, you know, in the social media space, everybody is supportive of the TTC journey and mm-hmm. what it is that they're going through. Sometimes you can put yourself in that comparison situation when you're reading someone's stories and you're following very closely to, like, their struggle and their pain, and, you know, you start to fit yourself in there. And I think, like, that's where we can get, where things can get even more, like, dangerous for our mental health.
I think social media can just be a double-edged sword in every way. But I think that, you know, I'm grateful for it because there are questions sometimes that I have that sometimes I can go and find an answer to. Or even, for example, before you and I really started speaking openly with each other, I went through a period of time of feeling super alone. And I actually found a woman in Guelph who shares her story really openly on Instagram. And I messaged her and we went for a coffee. And her and I keep in touch now. And at that point in time, she was one of the only people that I had to relate to speak to. And I wouldn't have had that without social media. And I think that was a huge blessing. It's what I needed at that moment. Mm-hmm. So... but yeah, I think you have to have the wherewithal to know what's good for you and when to shut it off, or you know what I mean? And putting yourself out there can be hard, you know. Sometimes people get, you know, unwarranted advice or unwelcomed questions, whatever it might be. But I think, yeah, you need to just, like, you know, kind of protect yourself where you need to.
And on that note, you know, we recorded this episode because we really wanted to share some of our learnings and our blessings, and we wanted to help uplift any listeners who can relate to our story and or who maybe, you know, maybe you're not there yet, but you're a bit fearful of what that might look like. And, you know, maybe you've been trying for a couple of months and you feel, like Rachel said, alone and don't have anyone to reach out to. I know myself personally, I will leave my contact. You can find me on social media. Please message me. And I assume Rachel feels the same.
Yeah. I think just since being more open about this, I think. Yeah. I briefly one day posted sort of like an image about IVF and how it's kind of like this iceberg and you see only part of it and the rest is, you know, very, can be very painful. And I had two or three people in my friend list who I know reach out and say that they have undergone some kind of fertility treatment or that they feel for me and they have been there and they've kept it a secret. And so please, let's talk. Let's like, let's break this stigma. I don't think you need to suffer in silence. It doesn't help anything.
Well, thank you so much, Rachel, for this interview. This is wonderful. And yeah, I look forward to the more amazing things we're going to do in this fertility space together.
Sounds good. Me too.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Hormone Heartbeat podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, or if you think today's episode would benefit a friend, a family member, or someone you know who's going through similar challenges with infertility, please share this episode with them. My ultimate goal is that all women can be empowered to know that they're not alone in the journey and to know that they have someone that they can talk to and that really understands exactly what they're going through.